This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
7-point lead at the four-minute mark for the Spurs, trying to earn their ninth consecutive victory.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
An impressive performance on both ends by the Spurs. Weathering a couple of storms by Golden State. And they secure their 22nd straight winning season as they continue to battle for playoff position. And the Warriors now are tied with Denver atop the Western Conference standings with the loss tonight.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
That will do it. That shot will not count. The Blazers winning 106-98 as Portland continues its playoff push.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brendan Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon.
Beautiful outside.
We are just 2 days away from beginning Fan Madness out at the Independent Sports Bar and Grill. Our show, Isaac and Souk, will be out there live at 3 o'clock. Or, no, 12 o'clock.
Yeah,
we still 7 o'clock.
There you go, 12 to 7.
Little brain fart there.
Come hang out Thursday, Friday, huh? And you can watch the Duck game on Friday because it's going to be going on. We're off the air at 1, and the game's supposed to start at about 1:30, so it's right in the middle of the day on Friday.
So come hang out, have a few drinks, have some laughs, and say hi to us, too. Don't go out there and not say hi to us. Get your lazy asses out there, have a good time, and say hello.
Look, we all know that everybody out there wants to get out of work on Thursday and Friday, and the vast majority of you will find ways to get out of work Thursday and Friday. So if you're leaving work, you might as well come down and be productive with us, right?
Well, you're not going to work. That's the thing is, like, people act like, oh, I can't watch it. Yeah, you're going to.
You're just turn on the old computer.
You're
going to
stream it on your phone. You're going to hide it in the corner of your cube.
Yeah, find a way. Get around it.
You have the tissues in front, so when the boss comes over, you mute it, put the tissues in front of the phone, and act like you're doing work.
These were some of my favorite days I remember in school. There was always the one cool teacher who would wheel in the old school TV into whatever room it was going to be in and would totally acknowledge the fact that nobody wants to be productive on the first 2 days of the tournament. Like that, everybody remembers that teacher from their school. Those were awesome moments. And you kind of find a way to get out of class and you'd go hang out in one room and that teacher wouldn't rat on you and the tournament would just be on all day. So great memories of the tournament.
Well, I like that you said that one teacher at Park Rose, that was like half the teachers.
Was it really half?
They had teacher pools going on. I picked like four brackets for four different teachers, and during classes, they would wheel them in.
Into multiple classrooms, huh?
Oh,
yeah, we didn't
have
multiple at Cleveland. It was usually just one or two, and you'd have to find the select spot, and you'd be cool with the teacher, and he'd let you come hang out.
I had somebody email me about a year ago, and they said, hey, I've listened to the show for a while now, and I feel it's not responsible of you to talk about Park Rose the way that you do on the air.
Oh, really?
And
you're too negative on the on Park Rose?
They think I'm bringing too much negative aspects to what Park Rose is as a high school.
That's grade school.
I've been out of Park Rose for quite some time now, so I can't speak to what Park Rose is now or has been for a ton of years. When I was there, though, that's what I speak about.
Just speaking realities here, people.
And the reality is, like, half the teachers are watching those tournaments with TVs rolled in.
That, to me, though, is not a negative on the school. That is a positive.
I was never mad about it.
Yeah, if you're telling me half the teachers in the building are going to have the tournament on Thursdays and Fridays, those first 2 days, I'm all for that as a kid.
I had a guidance counselor once talk to us about college. You know how you have to go have those talks? What do you want to do in your life?
Where do you want to go to school?
Let's pretend that you know what you want to do at 16 and 17 years old. And I remember being in a meeting with them, and they were like, what do you want to do? And, you know, your grades really need to rise to this if you want to try to apply to these institutions. And I remember looking at them, and I go, I just watched the news yesterday. We got an F on our report card as a school. And they instantly like stopped. They took in what I said. And they go, if we're being honest, don't let all the idiots here dictate that you're also an idiot.
Don't let them weigh you down, Brandon.
And
okay?
I said, you know what? That was a perfect response to what I said.
That's a solid response. Just because we got a couple of dumb kids in the school doesn't mean you don't have to be one too.
Now, I want to actually start this segment not talking about high school or education. I want to talk about a sports topic that we're not going to get to today.
Fire it up. What do we got?
So I was going through my email and I saw something that I had jotted down a few shows ago that we never talked about and never brought it up. And I just thought this is worthy of at least saying one time on the radio show. We don't even have to dive into it because I don't know where you start.
Okay.
So I saw this on Twitter about 2 weeks ago and I instantly thought there's no way that's real. It's real. So Michael Jordan played exactly 500 regular season games as a Chicago Bull following three games into the start of their 1990-91 season, championship year.
Okay.
Start of that year, they lost three games in a row. He never lost more than two in a row during that span after losing those three in a row. 500 regular season games.
How is that possible?
And Jordan and the Bulls never lost three in a row after that three-game losing streak.
How is that possible?
He also played in 126 career playoff games during that same stretch.
Yeah.
Without losing three in a row in the playoffs.
Never. Well, yeah, because, I mean, at that point, he never lost a playoff series the rest of his career. So that makes sense.
He lost back-to-back games just a total of 16 times over the 500-game span.
Lord, that is unbelievable. Like, imagine having something like that happen. Like Golden State was dominant as we thought they would be coming into the year, and injuries have played a part in it. Like, how many times? They've lost three games in a row. A couple of times this season, I would care to guess.
Right.
With the year that they've had, just in one season. So they had the 1 year where they topped him with the overall win-loss record for breaking the number for the regular season from those Bulls. But to do it that many years in a row, that's one of the more remarkable things. That goes down as like, you hear those stats sometimes that nobody's ever going to break. That'll never happen again.
When will that 500 games?
Ever, over a stretch of 500 games with the same team, never losing three games in a row. That will, in an 82-game season.
That's just so insane to
that
me.
That will never happen again.
And look, we're tying it to Jordan, obviously. It's a Jordan-credited stat, and I think he deserves an awfully big part of that. I think it also goes to show just how good and talented those teams were. Like, MJ shows up, and he wants to rip your heart out. He wants to punch you in the face, and then he wants to score 45 and get the win. He also had a team made up of guys that felt the same way.
They bought in with them,
and went out there and played the same way. They just didn't show it and act and produce the same level.
So, yeah, this has only happened, by the way, it should be noted. I didn't realize this. Golden State has only lost three games in a row once this season, and it was four in a row back in November. They lost to Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and OKC. So based on the record, I figured maybe it had happened a couple of times.
Well, they also in the finals. So
sure, in the finals as well. Yeah, yeah. I was just looking at this, and I'm sure maybe it happened last year too. But this year they have had one losing streak of three games or more, and it was in mid-November.
So they've done it twice in a four-year span. Jordan never right. did it in 500 games after having it happen one time.
I kind of want to go look up last year too and see if they had any last year.
I wouldn't shock me if they did.
That goes up like that. That's a stat that people won't ever really mention or bring up, but it will never happen again. Last year, I'm looking. Yep, three-game losing streak last year. Utah, Indiana, Milwaukee, and at the end of the year. So they probably were sitting guys or had nothing to play for.
Still.
Yeah, but they lost. Yeah.
You know? I know the rest thing is what makes the argument tough about nowadays.
You got a lot of guys managing their loads.
Yeah, and their loads are too managed. So you didn't have that in the 90s, right? Like, people didn't think about rest the same way that we do now because of all the science and whatnot. But, yeah, I saw that stat, and I don't know if I've even wrapped my brain around right. that stat. That's a remarkable feat by a team, and obviously one of, if not the best players of all time.
By the way, Golden State also the year prior, the first year, Kevin Durant, also a three-game losing streak that year.
So in the four straight years since they lost the finals and had KD, they've had three-game losing streaks sometimes multiple times in a year.
Yep, so the finals had happened, and then three straight years now where it's happened at least once in the regular season.
I also saw, by the way, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, never in their careers had losing seasons.
That makes sense.
But that list isn't very long.
No, it's
of
not.
Players that have had that in their career of never having one losing season. Like, LeBron's going to have a losing season.
Well, I believe he had a losing season his rookie year.
Yes, because they didn't go to the playoffs.
That made sense, too, because it was such a god-awful basketball team. But this will be the first one since his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the first year that he's going to miss the playoffs since his rookie season.
Yes.
He's made it every other season. Every other season he's been in the league.
Yeah. So that's a very random thing that I just threw at you in the first segment.
I remember you tweeted that out because there was you tweeted out the SportsCenter highlights and they were in Seattle or they were somewhere.
Steve Levy was on the call and it was like old school SportsCenter.
Trying to avoid a 3-game losing streak and they went in. He wasn't great, but they found a way to get the win and it was like, man, that is crazy.
Yeah. So I just wanted to pass that along. I thought that was kind of a cool stat and I never shared it before. All right, let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Nerd and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap, brought to you in The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. Can only imagine the weather over there with our good friends in Pacific City and Cannon Beach.
Good week to be at the beach.
This is the perfect day to just randomly skip on a Tuesday and go to the coast.
I'm not feeling good today. Sorry. Need to go home.
We got a good show today. The Blazers win without CJ against Indy last night. Maybe Dame's best game of the year.
He was damn good.
He controlled that game in a way that you don't see many basketball players have that ability. We'll dive into the Daily Ticker. The Angels made a big splash today, according to Jeff Passan. They've reached a 12-year deal with Mike Trout for $430 million.
Woo!
So forget him going to Philly because that ain't happening for at least 10 years.
Sorry, Bryce Harper. You can't tamper anymore.
David Gettleman, maybe a name you know, maybe it doesn't. It's the GM of the New York Football Giants. He defended everything they've been doing. He's digging his heels in. He's had enough of just being destroyed in the national media.
I know what I'm doing here. Don't you worry.
And you've got to hear him explain his thoughts on everything that's gone down. So we'll bring that to you. Russell Wilson, he's looking to set a record. And that's not setting a record in helping the team. It's looking to set a record for most money for a quarterback. Is John Gruden an evil genius? We'll dive into that a little bit.
Damn right he is.
I love the theory because it only explains why you can be so dumb.
The analytical minds disagree with you, my friend.
We've got NFL true or false at 1:30 to get to the Mariners. You remember we talked about Felix and their opening day starter situation?
Yeah, they're ending the streak. I think he started 10 consecutive opening days for them.
Well, we're going to bring this topic back up and instead bring another athlete to the forefront. And the Mariners are total hypocrites here. So we need to talk about that. The tourney is going to begin today if you count the play-in games. And that's at 3:40. So we're going to talk with Brian Bennett of The Athletic. He's a college basketball bracketologist. He's actually here in Portland.
Lives in the city.
Yeah, he lives in the city. He's going to join us today at 2:30. So we'll get his thoughts on the Oregon matchup, the Pac-12 matchups at large, and just how he views the tournament from somebody covering the sport. That's what's on tap, and it's brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. We'll start with the Trailblazers. They win their first game without CJ. Evan Turner was god-awful, and was that Damian Lillard's best game of the year? We'll start there on 1080 The Fan. All right, 12-19 on The Fan. The Blazers get their first win without CJ in the first game without CJ. They beat the Pacers 106-98 last night. And, you know, I thought they looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Ball movement was great. Dame had 15 assists, one shy of his career high, 16. I was really hoping he can get 20 assists last night.
You're pushing for a Westbrook kind of performance. Just start trying to shoot for as many assists as you can find.
Go assist hunting. That's what I wanted from him. But look, he gave you a hell of a performance. He gave you 30 and 15.
Yeah.
They pulled away. He hit a three-pointer that couldn't have been more than 5 feet in front of the half-court line. Just buried one from deep. Crowd went nuts. They looked really good without him. Evan Turner looked like he looked horrible. I was going to say something even meaner, but he was horrible.
He was really bad last night.
I'm at a point now where I guess time to time, okay, you got to stop playing him consistently.
Yeah.
He's such a bad fit with this roster. But with that being said, still found a way to get a good win against a good defensive team.
Sure.
who hasn't gone away since their star got hurt himself. And encouraging news for Blazer fans.
Yeah, you know, I would say outside of the start, you got off to a sluggish start. You missed your first 10 threes of the night, which is never a great sign. And then you didn't close the game particularly strong. You only scored 18 points in the fourth quarter. And it felt like, I mean, you led by as many as, what, 20 there in, early in the fourth or midway through the fourth. And I kept waiting to turn the game off thinking it was going to be over. And then Indiana would go on a little 9 or 10-0 run and find a way back in the game. And he had to knock down some late free throws to cinch the win. So the start and the finish weren't great signs. But everything that happened in between, I thought, was. And I said yesterday, I think Portland's going to be just okay or just fine without C.J. McCollum. They're going to be able to come up with the 20 points per game that he was putting up. And there might be some nights where you miss him because there's nobody on this roster outside of Dame, really, that can replace that top-end C.J. You know, like when he goes for, what was it, 25 and a quarter against the Clippers in the fourth, when that was a close game, and then he won it single-handedly by himself in that quarter. Like, there's performances like that that Rodney Hood and Aminu and Harkless won't be able to combine to get. But you saw last night, Hood wasn't necessarily knocking down threes all over the place, but he had double figures. Curry knocked down a couple of shots. He had double figures. Collins defensively, I thought, looked good for the first time, and it feels like 6 months that we've seen him had an impact on a game.
Yeah, Richmond had a good point. That was his best game post-All-Star break. He just brought good energy.
He did. It was energy. He was moving it. He hit a couple of shots. He had a couple of blocks. Like, that's what you want to see from Collins. So I thought you saw everybody else lift up their production, and most importantly, Damian Lillard lift up his production. Like, for him to go out and have a game like that, 30 points, shoot efficiently from the floor, I thought was great, but also to have the 15 assists was cool because he doesn't do that very often. And to continue to trust his teammates when they started as cold as they did. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of those games where I think you'd look at a lot of stars where you're playing without another big-time player. Everybody around you is missing shots. So they're 0 for 10 from three. You're struggling. You're down early in the first quarter. And it's easy for a guy of his stature just to start jacking it up left and right and say, I got to do this by myself. And he continued to trust him, and it paid off. They started falling, and that was what led him to a win.
Yeah, Nurk had a good night. I know he fouled out, but Nurk had a really good night himself. They did kind of blow it there at the end and almost allow Indiana to kind of sneak back into it, but they had a good enough lead where that wasn't going to happen. and maybe people point to that and go, see, you need CJ. Yeah, I'm not going to freak out over that. From time to time, that is going to just how the NBA is going to work. Sometimes you're not going to have everything in control from start to finish. And as you mentioned, slow start. Then took control and then kind of struggled a little bit there to end it. I know Dame has had some remarkable games this year. Has he had 250-point games?
Oh, I believe just one, but let me check.
Well, I know he's gotten to 50 this year. With that
he
being
did in
said,
the loss to, when it was in a loss.
That's
they
right.
lost to OKC.
With that being said, I thought last night, given the circumstances, was his best game of the year. He was in complete control. Like, in a way where when you watch some of the best who have ever done it, you can kind of get a sense, like Steph has this ability. We've seen LeBron do this countless times. Like some of the, Kevin Durant has had his moments as well. Like the truly elite players in the league, they have those nights where they come in and you're rooting like hell against them and they're never shaken by it.
Yeah.
They're just this confidence and this calmness about it, and they control the like almost every aspect of the game. Not to say Dame single-handedly did every single thing for his team, but it just felt like with him out there, he wasn't going to allow them to have a big slip up. He was locked in. He played really good defense last night.
He did.
He was down on the block, you know, getting his body beat up. He took a good charge late in that game.
He had a block and three steals.
He was getting everybody involved. Aminu had a great night, had four threes. I know Lehman struggled, but like he was always dishing and looking to get guys going. And he gave you 30 points. Yeah, I thought that was his best game of the year. You can point to other games where he's given more production in the points category. I thought overall he played his best game of the year last night. And it came at a great time because there was nothing like building confidence for your team in their first game without CJ. And now they have Dallas coming on Wednesday, Detroit on Saturday, Brooklyn on Monday, and then they go on the road for a little bit. Those aren't gimmies. Detroit's playing decent basketball. Brooklyn, they're not quite the same team that they once were, but they're still a little bit of a pest. And again, Luka goes crazy against Dallas. We saw earlier this year when he hit that corner three to go to overtime. You never know. But you start off with that win. And then I thought it was interesting in the locker room. He was telling the media that he doesn't want CJ to come back. You know, he's a P1 of our show. He was listening yesterday. He does not want CJ to come back in the regular season. He wants him 100% healthy for the playoffs. And he's mentally getting ready for that scenario, and I love it. I completely agree with his thoughts there.
Well, by the way, Dame, one 50-point game this year. He has a number of 40-point games, but only the one 50-point game in the loss to OKC. So I'm with you. I think you can put this as one of, if not his best performance of the season, considering the 15 assists and no CJ out there. And I did think that was a telling quote, and that to me is the best case or the best course of action going forward. You don't want to rush CJ McCollum back, because we can disagree on whether this is going to be the same extent of Kevin Garnett's injury when he suffered the same one. But the telling thing from that and finding out about this type of injury was that when Kevin Garnett tried to come back early and tried to be a part of the playoffs, he rushed it a little bit and it didn't feel good. And he ended up having to go back and sit down again. And that to me is the last thing that you want to do. Is rush CJ back in 2.5-3 weeks. If he's not feeling 100%, get him a couple of games, and then he's not able to go for whatever reason come playoff time. They're going to be fine without him because of, one, how Dame can play, and he can lift a team and elevate them in situations like this, as we saw last night. But two, their schedule is ridiculously easy, as we talked about yesterday. Like, Indiana, over the next 2.5 weeks, might be the best opponent on there. And that,
you got Denver. Get Denver back-to-back in April, but that's
I'm saying in the next 2.5 weeks. That's like in the last week of the regular season. That's down. Those are in your last like 4 or 5 games of the year. Everybody else is, I mean, you're talking non-playoff teams in the West or borderline playoff teams in the East, like Detroit,
like
and
you're
Brooklyn.
At Chicago, you're at Atlanta. Yeah,
those are gimmies. You should be able to win those games without CJ the way Dame can play. And we've seen him. You don't want to have him, you know, carry a team entirely, but when he needs to, as we saw last year in that 13-game winning streak, he can put a team on his back.
I'll go real bold here. I think they go 9-3. They're going to finish the year 9-3.
They got 12 games left.
They got 12 games left. I think they have 3 hiccups there, including the Denver game, obviously, the back-to-back Denver games.
Well, and Denver, don't forget now, they're fighting for that one seed with Golden State losing last night. There's a lot on the line there for Denver.
And I can't foresee that getting to a point by April 5th where suddenly they go, yeah, we don't care anymore. Now
right.
We can rest.
Right.
They could be playing both those games 100% be going, we want the one seed. So I'll go 9-3 in their last 12. And it's going to lead a lot of people. And if they get that match against OKC or San Antonio, I think a lot of people there are going to be picking them to win their first round series.
The interesting part now, too, is because you look at last night's slate, and I'm scoreboard watching every night just to see how teams around them are doing. Westbrook, of course, was suspended last night because of the technicals, and they lost at home to Miami.
They have a game and a half now on the Thunder.
Game and a half on them. But maybe the team that you do have to keep an eye out, and I don't think we would have thought this at all maybe 3 weeks ago, is the team that just beat you. San Antonio's won 9 straight. The way they're playing at home.
Look who they've beaten, too. They've beaten the top teams in the NBA. Good Portland is one of them.
Including Portland. And I know CJ went down in that game, but he played essentially 3 full quarters. And so that was a quality win. They've won 9 straight. They're only a game and a half behind you. And they're technically ahead of OKC now in the standings because of the tiebreaker. So the playoffs started today. You would play the Spurs now, not the Thunder. So while OKC's been struggling a little bit, I still think Houston is too far ahead of you to catch, and just the way they've been playing over the last 6 weeks or so. It's been a pretty high level of basketball. So you're going to battle that 4 or 5 spot, but maybe it's going to be San Antonio and not Oklahoma City like we all thought.
Yeah, so Portland beats Indiana last night, first game without CJ, 106-98. They get Dallas tomorrow, Detroit at home, and then Brooklyn on Monday before they hit a 4-game road trip. All right, coming up next, the Daily Ticker. Mike Trout signs a monster deal. We'll talk Mike Trout and the Angels on the Daily Ticker next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Time for the Daily Ticker, and we have one stop to make. The big news of the day in the national sports scene is that Mike Trout and the Angels have agreed upon a 12-year, $426.5 million contract.
Woo, he got paid.
And our next guest, Jeff Fletcher, the beat writer for the OC Register on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline, put it very well in his story online at the OC Register, that for all the Angels fans concerned about Mike Trout leaving soon, he has come to an agreement. He will be an Angel probably for most of the rest of his career. And Jeff joins us now. Jeff, thanks for the time, my man. Should we be surprised that this happened, that he didn't want to hit free agency, or is this kind of who he's always been?
You know, I don't think anybody should be surprised, because how many people are going to turn down an extra $360 million?
Not me.
It's easy for somebody to say, oh, yeah, I want to win. But when it comes down to it, he had an extra $360 million the Angels were offering him today. And if you turn that down, then you're kind of banking on what's behind door number three. And certainly if he doesn't get hurt, then there's going to be a lot of money still out there. But you never know. He plays very hard, and things happen. And I think that he likes the Angels, by all accounts. He seems to be very happy here. And they're not the Marlins. You know, they're not a team that just has no chance. They've had some rough years with injuries, but they're certainly trying to be competitive. And they have the kind of payroll that they can continue to try to be competitive. So there's no reason to think that they won't, you know, give him a chance to win year in and year out. And like I said, he likes it here, and they gave him a ton of money.
Yeah.
So I don't know why anybody would be surprised that he wouldn't take it.
Well, and I think the argument that some have tried to make today against it, and I don't quite understand it, is that, you know, one guy makes this much money. What are you supposed to do with the rest of the team? He's going to eat up all this salary space. Where are they at financially outside of this deal? And you mentioned you don't think it's going to hamstring him much. Like, what does it do for them in the future in terms of building a ball club around him?
Well, what they've really tried to do the last few years is really build up their farm system. That's why they haven't traded any of their prospects. And they could have tried to get JT Realmuto or something like that this winter, but that would have given up a chunk of their farm system. So what they're trying to do is have a really strong farm system that can provide a core of cheap players around Mike Trout. And it's actually financially, I mean, right now he's making $33 million, and the new deal he's going to be making $36 million. So it really doesn't change very much. Yeah. And Albert Pujols is going to come off the books after 2021. So, you know, it really doesn't affect very much financially for them.
Yeah. Jeff Fletcher, the OC Register, covering the Angels, our guest now. He's on Twitter at Jeff Fletcher OCR. Give him a follow on Twitter. You mentioned the farm system and building up prospects. Obviously, Ohtani's still there, and Mike Trout and doing what he has established. When you look at the Angels, what leaves you maybe optimistic within the next 2 to 3 years of now having Mike Trout there and being face of the franchise who's agreed upon this big deal? What leaves you optimistic they take that step and they finally maybe get over that playoff hurdle that they've been struggling with for so long?
Well, you know, like I mentioned, their farm system has improved a lot lately. They got a kid named Joe Adell who's 19 years old. And they say is the best prospect the Angels have had since Mike Trout. He's ranked like 2 to 14 or whatever in all of baseball, depending on what you look at. Mm-hmm. And he could come up and he could be a fixture for a long time. And they've got a couple of really good pitching prospects, Jose Suarez and Griffin Canning, that are both top 100 type guys. You know, if you can just start plugging in into your everyday lineup three or four more guys who make the minimum, then all of a sudden you have a lot more leeway to go and supplement that from outside with like a Garrett Cole or something like that, who's going to be a free agent next year. And, you know, I think even right now, the current 2019 Angels, you know, they had 80 games last year, and I think they're going to be better than that this year. And so that puts you within striking distance of the playoffs right now. You know, they had a huge raft of injuries last year. They had like 12 starting pitchers get hurt. So if you just have a normal year where maybe three get hurt or two, then you're a lot better just right off the bat. So I think they have a chance to contend for the playoffs certainly right now. And it's going to get better as their farm system guys start to matriculate to the big leagues.
You know, one of the things that's always surprised me just in being a big baseball fan and realizing how good Mike Trout is being frustrated with him not being, I guess, more well-known across the sports landscape. And ESPN does these, like, most famous or most well-known athletes, and he's usually not on any of those lists. Why do you think that is? It's somebody that's around the team and around Mike Trout. Why do you think he's not more, I guess, recognizable or well-known to the just general sports fan out there?
Well, I think, for starters, anybody in baseball is going to start off being much less well-known than celebrities in other sports, you know, because just the nature of the game. You know, when if you watch an Angels game, you might see Mike Trout actually doing something on TV for, you know, like 11 minutes out of the game, you know, because he bats four times, catches a few balls in the outfield. It's not like, you know, LeBron, where you watch him and he's on the floor the whole time and camera's always on him. And then when you add the fact that the Angels haven't been able to get to the playoffs when the most people are watching, you know, that hurts him too. And also, he's just really not interested in doing the kind of things off the field that would make him well-known, you know, going on the Jimmy Kimmel show or, you know, doing more commercials. He doesn't want to do that. So, you know, the way for him to get more famous is for the Angels to get to the playoffs more often, which they're trying to do. It hasn't worked so far, but, you know, it's not for lack of effort.
Yeah.
Jeff, do you think he felt uncomfortable with the Bryce Harper stuff when Bryce Harper kind of threw his name out there two different times? He obviously has the tie to Philly. He goes to Eagles games. Do you think he felt uncomfortable with that kind of a conversation?
Yeah. I do. I think, first of all, I don't think Mike Trout and Bryce Harper are very close friends. I think they played together. They're acquaintances. I don't think they hang out a lot in the off season. They're totally different kind of people. And I think Trout probably has known for a long time that he's really happy with the Angels. The Angels are really happy with him and we're going to give him the most money ever. So he probably was pretty sure all along that he was going to re-sign with the Angels. So, you know, he didn't like, you know, when Bryce Harper starts talking about it, I'm sure he's uncomfortable with that. And, you know, if I'm Bryce Harper, I'm bringing that stuff up more than anything just to ingratiate myself to the Philly fans, you know? So I never really put too much stock in any of that.
Yeah, I'm curious to ask you while we have you on, too, because one of the other Angels stories we've been following as of late is the stadium situation of the, you know, the lease and then the rumors of Long Beach potentially being a location. I think the mayor of Long Beach came out and he's trying to entice them to move the ballpark there. Do you have any updates on that? What's going on with their stadium situation?
I don't think the Angels are going anywhere, but Anaheim, I think that they would like to get the city to do some upgrades to the stadium. The stadium is getting pretty old, and there's a lot of things they could do to add to it. And the only way they're really going to have any leverage to ask the city to do these things is if they have a threat, at least, of someplace else they could go. They did this a few years ago, and they had talked about Tustin, which is another city in Orange County, maybe building a stadium there. But, you know, I think it's all just a leverage play. I really can't see the Angels moving out of Anaheim. It's a great location from transportation-wise with the freeways, and they have a stadium now. In California, it's impossible to build anything new these days because there's so much regulation that you have to go through. So I can't see anybody building them a new stadium anywhere else. So I think they're just trying to get upgrades to what they have.
All right, Jeff, as quickly as possible, do you prefer to be the LA Angels, the Anaheim Angels, or the California Angels?
We just call them the Angels in our paper. That makes it a lot simpler. So
you don't have a preference yourself?
It doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
I get paid the same no matter what.
There you go. Good stuff, man. Jeff Fletcher, OC Register, beat writer on the Angels on the Mike Trout deal, 12 years, $426.5 million. He'll be down in L.A. for quite some time. Thanks so much for the time, Jeff. We appreciate it and really good insight.
Thanks.
All right, there we go. Jeff Fletcher, the OC Register on the Mike Trout deal. He's going to be an Angel. Despite Bryce Harper going, hey, I'm going to talk to a guy in 2 years who loves Philly.
Yeah.
Mike Trout said, why don't you buzz off, Bryce? I'm staying here.
Well, there was always going to be connections there because of where he's from, because of his Philly fandom. He shows up to Sixer games in the offseason. He, of course, is a season ticket holder to the Eagles. So there was always going to be those dots connected. I agree, though, with the point. I think it was mostly just Bryce Harper trying to endear himself to his new fan base at his press conferences by throwing out Mike Trout's name and saying, of course, I'm going to go after him, because the fans had already thought about that connection in the past. All that being said, though, I am really shocked by this. Maybe I shouldn't. I don't know Mike Trout personally, but when I consider what the future could have held for him, I was surprised by this news today.
$426.5 million, just right, too much, not enough. What do you think of the Mike Trout deal? We'll dive into that a little bit, and then a loaded second hour just ahead on The Fan. So we woke up this morning with the news, 12 years, $426.5 million. Mike Trout will remain an Angel basically the rest of his career. If he goes elsewhere, it'll probably be when he sucks. I did forget to ask Jeff one important question. Is there a trade clause in this?
No trade clause, I believe. Yeah, no trade clause the entire time.
He's going Harper. He wants to be there the whole time of the contract.
Wants to be with the Angels.
I was kind of in your camp. Not that he's agreed to a $400 million contract. I kind of just assumed that's what he was going to get no matter where he decided to stay or go.
Mm-hmm.
It was more so for me not wanting to explore what the options were and saying, okay, I'm going to play for the Angels under $33 million this year. If we suck again and there's no clear indication of what Ohtani is he a pitcher? Is he a hitter? They don't really know yet.
Which way are we going here?
If these prospects get called up and they don't produce.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to then start looking into the free agency world and go talk to some teams. And if you want to go back to the Angels, great. I don't blame him at all. It is $400 million. I'm not going to tell you this guy made a bad choice.
For 426.8 or whatever it is to be exact.
Count the endorsements. Yeah. He's probably at 445.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell him he made a bad choice. I just was more curious why he didn't want to check out free agency. But I think to the Angels' credit, he trusts what they're doing and he loves being in L.A.
Yeah, and this is another example. I think we learned this, and I learned this from time to time, of pontificating on what somebody's going to do without knowing anything about them. my thought process here was...
I used to do that a lot when I was younger. Just like 2-3 years ago,
well,
I would
sure.
do that.
When we were talking about Mike Trout during the whole Bryce Harper stuff when he was tampering and trying to get him and recruit him to Philly, and I was of the opinion that this thing was going to kind of blow up on the Angels, that he was, at the time, a couple of weeks ago, his quote was, "I don't want to negotiate a contract in the spring." And he signed his last deal in the spring. So everybody was connecting the dots, thinking like, whoa, he kind of wants out. Is this going to get to the point where we're going to have to trade him? Do we have an Anthony Davis situation on our hands here? And that's kind of the direction I thought that this was going to go, without understanding what was important to Trout, what he valued in terms of his career and where he was. And clearly being in that community, being a part of that organization, and having a $430 million contract thrown at you was enough to get him to sign. I firmly believe if Mike Trout had waited the 2 years and hit the free agent market, he would have gotten $500 million if there was a bidding war for him. He is that level of player. He's not as popular as Bryce Harper, but popularity doesn't matter to a lot of clubs because of what he produces on the field consistently year in and year out. And I had a differing feeling on this. Like, one, part of me is like, I'm happy for him. Like, he's locked up. Good for him. He got paid. He deserves every penny of that contract, in my opinion. The other part of me, though, thought this was a bummer for baseball for a couple of reasons. One, not having a Mike Trout free agency, I think you're losing a major offseason storyline, because when you have a guy that is unquestionably the best in your sport hit the open market, that is talked about the entire offseason. Hell, look at just the Harper and Machado conversations, and he's far better player than both of those guys on the field. So it would have created a storyline throughout the course of the offseason. And the other part is we spend so much time on baseball talking about what's wrong with the game? How do we get more eyeballs on it? Do we need to speed it up? Now we're limiting pitching mound visits, and you have to face three hitters when you come into a game. All this nonsense that we're going through. When baseball should be acknowledging the real issue in the sport is not that you have a guy changing pitchers a couple of times late in the game. It's the fact that Mike Trout isn't one of the most top 50 recognizable athletes in America, and he is without a doubt the best player your sport has and has had for the last 7 years. That's the issue. And as long as he's not in the playoffs, nothing's going to change in that regard.
So they had a list come out recently, the 100 most popular athletes in the world. One baseball player made the list. It was Bryce Harper at 99.
That's your issue. And that's why
Mike Trout is such a better ball player.
And that's why when I saw this news, I was a little bit bummed. And who knows? Like, people out there know more about the Angels than I do. And we have Angels fans that are psyched about this. I would be totally psyched.
You call Jason Quick and get him on. But their farm system's good. Otani was a great player until he got hurt
last year. And they have some bad contracts coming off the books here soon, mainly Pujols in 2021. So maybe he ends up winning while he's there. But Major League Baseball does nothing to market their players, which is their biggest weakness, and they should focus more on that than pitching mound visits. And until he is able to get to the pinnacle of the sport, I really don't think this is going to change. Like, a guy I would equate him to almost to a certain extent, and the other guy's more popular, but it's like a Giannis Antetokounmpo, mm-hmm. who is, we can all agree, like top three, top four player in the league, maybe the MVP this year. Mm-hmm. But he's not necessarily well-known. He's not a household name yet for one main reason. He's not very marketable, at least as of now, and he hasn't been to the highest levels of the NBA. Kawhi Leonard, people know who Kawhi Leonard is. Why? Not because of his personality. It's because he went to the NBA Finals and he was a Finals MVP. If Mike Trout had a moment like that where he goes to the World Series and he's hitting home runs all over the place, his popularity and relevance is going to skyrocket. And that was my concern. Like, him signing with the Angels, they had been to the playoffs one time with him, and they got swept by the Kansas City Royals. The guy's never won a playoff game.
He had one hit, right, and it was a home run?
He had one hit in the series, and it was a home run. Like, that needs to change just for the sake of baseball popularity.
Well, when you get a contract like that, you always get the people that want to argue, is it worth it? Is it not worth it? Darren Rovell took a real nerd approach and just got destroyed for it.
Nerd alert.
He tweeted out, "Don't understand this deal. He's not even top 15 in jersey sales. Hasn't been for like 3 years. People don't care. They're not buying
his
gear.
Because they all
have
his jersey already."
Well, but so somebody said that to him, and then he goes, "Tom Brady's been number three for 10 years. He's been with the same team." And then somebody responded, "You're talking about Boston sports fan who probably burns his jersey if they lose a September game to the Buffalo Bills."
Also talking about the National Football League and maybe the most recognizable athlete in America.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is unfortunate he doesn't get more attention. Like, even his Subway commercials are boring as hell. It's just him standing there with a bat over his shoulder eating a sub for 10 seconds.
And I can't knock the guy. That's his personality. He doesn't want to do that kind of stuff.
And that's fine. I'm not telling him he doesn't need to. Yeah. He just made $400 million. Why do I care now? If I didn't care before, why do I care now about advertising? They're going to make the money hand over fist with him, though. This was a no-brainer deal for the Angels. You have now kept the best player in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
As we just got from Jeff Fletcher, his salary went from 33 before this contract to now 36 with it.
Right, so this notion that it's going to cripple them financially.
No, it's no
difference. It's a 12-year deal. It's the same thing with Harper and Machado. People said that, and then you look at the average amount of the salary, right, and you still have money to spend year by year.
Now, I don't know why there's a media member I got back and forth with on Twitter, and I actually have seen other people on social media today, which maybe speaks of what social media is now. These are your highest paid players in baseball. Arenado, A-Rod had one of the monster contracts until 17. Machado, Stanton, Harper, and Trout. Now, you could point to that and go, none of them are winning. I would point to that and go, those teams all locked up some of the best players in the game, and the Angels just got the best one. If you're mediocre to bad, like the Angels have been, do you really want to do it without Mike Trout?
Right. What's the alternative?
Or would you rather go, we're close, we didn't quite make it. Hey, free agent, big name pitcher. We're in LA and we have Mike Trout and he loves us so much that he committed to us for 12 years. Yeah. I'd rather take my chances being mediocre to bad with Mike Trout than doing it without and hoping to God I hit on my farm system. Not everybody's the Houston Astros. No. I'll just say that. That's why there's been just the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
Come on.
This notion that he's not worth it is just laughable. Like, you can make that argument about Bryce Harper, and I totally understand where you're coming from. You can make the argument about Machado and say, do you want to deal with the headaches that may or may not come with the stuff that he says and does off the field and the not hustling and the antics and getting into it with other teams? I'll listen to those arguments. But for a player of Mike Trout and what he's accomplished as being in the big leagues, I won't hear a word of it. That guy is worth every penny of this deal. And to pretend like it's his fault that the Angels have faltered around him and haven't been able to have postseason success is ridiculous. Sure, one guy doesn't necessarily make the entire difference. It takes a team. It takes a team in every sport, in the NBA, in the National Football League. It takes a team to win. That's why it's a team sport. But there are so many examples of individuals having big moments and putting teams over the top. But I'll look no further. No, he didn't get $430 million. But J.D. Martinez, if he doesn't sign with Boston a year ago, do the Red Sox go to the World Series and win the World Series last year?
He had an incredible season. He was a monster for
him. Incredible season. And putting a guy like that in your lineup day in and day out made a huge difference for them. So, yes, one player can have a big impact. Just think about, dude, this guy had a .460 on base percentage last year.
That's insane.
He's on base almost every other time he comes to the plate. You look at his WAR. Sure, it's a nerdy stat, win above replacement. He has been number one, number five, number two. That's what he's done in his career. He's finished in the top five every year in batting average in the American League outside of one year in which he was number nine. His on-base percentage has been number one in the American League every year but two or three years, and the lowest he's ever finished in on-base percentage is seventh. He plays a tremendous center field. He steals you 20 bases. I think he averages 30 stolen bases a year. He is the epitome of a guy who is a 5-tool player, and I have no problem with them paying him $430 million. If you want to criticize his contract, then please tell me what the alternative is.
There isn't one. You lose Mike Trout, and do you want to be the team that loses the best player in baseball?
You want to either let him walk in free agency or trade
him. How'd
that
work out for the Red Sox after Babe Ruth? It only went on for 120 years.
Right. We get wrapped up in these big-time contracts, and I think it's just short-sighted. Alex Rodriguez signed the deal with Texas. No, it didn't work because they didn't put anything else around him. Guess what happened when he got to New York?
A struggle, but they won a World Series.
They won a World Series. Like, Barry Zito got an astronomical deal with the Giants, and he was atrocious for the first, 4 or 5 years of that contract. Guess what? He ended up having a huge hand in them winning a World Series, so it was worth every penny of it. If the Angels are smart and they develop their farm system, and when they stop signing Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton to giant contracts, you can easily win with this kind of contract on your books.
Yeah, I'm with you there, but, you know, to each their own. Not everybody agrees on that, so we'll see. Somebody did ask at the Better You Today text line if it's a front-loaded or back-loaded or if it's just flat. I haven't dove into the details. What I do know for certain, though, is that it's $66 million the first 2 years. So that can kind of give you some idea.
And then it's not front-loaded because that's essentially what the average – I mean, you're looking at 30-something.
I guess it's 36, right?
Per year. So that's – yeah. My guess would be this is a balanced
– a flat deal,
flat deal where you're just getting paid. And that's the similar way I believe both Harper and Machado were. It just was –
because they're not leaving. Right. They want to be there at their respective teams. So. Yeah. Interesting move. Big news today. Mike Trout remains an Angel. I need to go down to a game this year. I might go.
But not to an Angels game, man.
Well, if I don't go this year, maybe next year, because I think I'm for sure going back to LA. Maybe go to one of these day games and
go watch Mike Trout, man.
Pay $7 to watch Mike Trout.
You could also always drive up to see him in Seattle. He's in Seattle 9 times a year.
I've seen him 3 times in Seattle.
Worth it.
Really good. Really good. All right, we got a packed second hour. We're going to kick it off with a Giants GM, Dave Gettleman, who defends all of the moves they made, including signing Eli and trading Odell. Hour two straight ahead on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.